This is Resonance 104.4 FM. Oh, hello. You've caught me doing a three-minute announcement, which opens the time-wasting radio show, the finest Sunday afternoon entertainment since John Craven's Country File. And I appreciate that I referred to John Craven in the opening show back on the 13th of November, but I don't think you appreciate the time and effort it takes to think up new ideas. So this week, I've not bothered quite as much. In fact, when I took on the task of presenting a weekly radio show, it never occurred to me quite how many assistants, producers, engineers, best boys, key grips, researchers, deputy assistant researchers, dolly grips, assistant dolly grips, and T-boys I would have to employ to keep the whole shebang on the airwaves. And now in the fifth week of the show, I filed for bankruptcy, crippled by the demands for blank checks from my crew. And when I say my crew, I'm not trying to indulge in hip-hop banter in order to impress with multicultural reference points. Although during the show this week, I'll be playing a record from India, alongside all the pasty white men making difficult music to try and impress girls they'll never get off with. So, if that doesn't tick the box of multiculturalism, I don't know what does. So, what else is in the show today, apart from the current statutory rambling? In about 10 minutes, we'll be welcoming onto the show my friend and mine, Kev Hopper, who will be telling me why the words jazz fusion aren't the kind of words you should only be using after the 9 p.m. watershed. Downstairs, waiting silently and patiently, I have the almost embarrassingly brilliant Stars in Battle Dress, who will be playing live material, especially for us, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, all the regular features are still hanging on by a thread. Steve Graziak will be telling us of sporting matters. Neil Scott will have a serene 75 seconds to tell us what's been occupying his mind this week. And the skullduggerous Andrew Ward will appear just after 1 o'clock with a kind of political comment that would never get on The World at One on Radio 4. My name's Rodri Marsden, and it's not often that I open a radio show by playing lo-fi music from Belgium. Although, to be fair to Belgium, it's not often that I open a radio show at all. To be even more fair to Belgium, the beer they produce that's known as Gers provided a minor epiphany for me earlier this year, and for that we should give particular thanks. But before that, let us give our initial thanks to Belgium dweller Sam Callow and his wonderful project known as 4Trek. Thank you. That was 4Trek with the wonderful tune Kamchatka from his imaginatively titled album 4Trek No. 4, whose naming tradition is obviously derived from the work of Led Zeppelin. Although the music isn't, thank goodness, because one thing I wouldn't foist on you at 12:05 on a Sunday afternoon is the song Misty Mountain Hop. Although I'm quite happy to play a Barbra Streisand backing track. Around this time last year, I was writing a feature for a national newspaper about a competition called Global Battle of the Bands, or GBOB. Last year was the inaugural year, and in order to collect enough research material for the article, I attended interminable heats around the country, watching sixth form bands with names like Faraday Darkspace performing a couple of tepid numbers each, before being ushered off stage by burly men in tight-fitting GBOB t-shirts. Over the weeks, I saw the most unintentionally hilarious goth band I've ever witnessed, who went by the name of Crimson Altar, and a group of 15-year-olds extolling the virtues of slugging back tequila in one's car when there's only 10 more miles to Mexico, despite the fact that they weren't old enough to drink or drive, or indeed travel to Mexico without being accompanied by a parent or guardian. There may not have been much worthwhile music to speak of, but watching dozens of wide-eyed wannabes put on a show was often magnificently entertaining, and often, surprisingly, quite moving. The competition culminated in a 5-hour spectacular at the London Astoria featuring 18 bands from around the world, and compared by a man in a spangly shirt who kept screaming, "What do you think of it so far?" at the audience. Needless to say, it was top-notch entertainment. So imagine my delight earlier this week when I was called by the GBOB organisers and asked to be one of the 5 judges at this year's final. Clearly they'd had someone drop out at the last minute, but that didn't diminish my enthusiasm. I was to be sitting on a panel alongside famed U2 producer Steve Lillywhite, former Sex Pistol Glenn Matlock, a girl called Kate who had sung with the band Rüksüp, and a bloke called Nick from Sony Music. With me tacked on the end, it would make an illustrious and wise collection of people. This year there were to be 24 bands in one night. Now when I go to a normal gig, if I see even 4 bands on the bill, I know that the first band will be halfway through their set before I get there, and I'll have left before the last band has finished because of severe fatigue. But 24, I was told that each band had been allotted 8 minutes each, a length of set which would allow them barely any time to build up a breathless, air-punching climax of the kind that takes Bruce Springsteen around 4 hours. I got there at 6 p.m. and had the usual run-in with the moronic security staff at the Astoria, who refused to believe that I was one of the judges, although I suppose I didn't look much like a judge, what with the absence of the regulation white wig and flowing crimson robes. I made my way upstairs and met up with my fellow panellists. I sat next to Nick from Sony Music. "Hello," he said. "Hi," I replied, and in a suitably Duke of Edinburgh-style tone added, "and what do you do?" "Oh," he replied, "I used to work for Sony Music until a couple of weeks ago, but I used to be in Wang Chung. I was Wang." This was exciting. God knows how many times I've laughed myself stupid at the notion of a duo calling themselves Wang Chung, which research tells me is Chinese for perfect pitch. But I didn't know that one of them was Wang, or perfect, and one of them was Chung, or pitch. I excitedly texted my friend Phil. "I'm sitting next to Wang, out of Wang Chung," I said. 30 seconds or so elapsed, and then I received a reply. "If I was going to be called Wang or Chung," he said, "I'd go for the one that's not a euphemism for cock." Phil had a point, but Nick was excellent company, and as the first few bands came on stage, introduced by a Scandinavian man who looked vaguely familiar, we exchanged matey banter and got on as well as could be expected, considering the age gap. Now, I appreciate that the last thing you want right now is for this lengthy anecdote to be interrupted, but if I do it all in one go, my mouth will get all dry and I might well start to choke. So check back at 1 p.m. and you will hear about the exciting climax of the Global Battle of the Bands competition. Now, firmly contrary to the traditions of the time-wasting radio show, here is a new record by a band who are still together, haven't split up, and God willing, may even make another record and perhaps even play a concert in a town near you. Here are Field Music.
Trying to find my shoes. It's not nothing to say anymore. Stand to horn Lily. If only my eyes looked up, I'd probably be back soon. But looking is never enough, cause looking's only good for taking apart the dark, the talk, the soul. The dark, the moon is on. Taking apart the dark, the talk is all done. Taking apart the dark, the moon is on. We wouldn't be so tough, we'd probably have more to say. But lying is never enough, well that's all we used to. Notice you're stuck in a rut. Seems like you're taking root. But wanting to be where we are is never any good. Taking apart the dark, the talk is all done. Taking apart the dark, the moon is on. Taking apart the dark, the talk is all done. Apart the dark, the moon is on. If only the moon were up, be trying to find my shoes. With nothing to say anymore, stain can only lose. If only my eyes looked up, perhaps I could find my way. Woo-hoo. I never could see very far. Seems only good for taking apart the dark, the talk is all done. Taking apart the dark, the moon is on. Taking apart the dark, the talk is all done. Taking apart the dark, the moon is on.
That was a song called If Only the Moon Were Up by Field Music, who are from the northeast of England, somewhere or other. And if only the moon were up now, we'd all be having our tea and looking forward to a long evening playing backgammon. Or some of us would. This is the Prove Me Wrong segment of the programme, where my own pathetic prejudices against certain artists or genres are dissected by knowledgeable musicians who have far more musical nous than I do. In the past weeks, I've been more or less convinced of the merits of Microhouse, Norwegian Black Metal, Wings, and indeed Dexy's Midnight Runners. This week, however, it's the turn of Jazz Fusion. The fact that Jazz Fusion is also known as merely Fusion only adds fuel to the fire, in my opinion, so it's time to turn to the multi-talented and persistently pleasant gentleman Kev Hopper to tell me where I'm going wrong. Kev, hello, and welcome to the programme this afternoon. Can I say before we start that I own no albums at all by Miles Davis, Chick Corea, the Mahavishnu Orchestra, Al Di Meola, Billy Cobham, or Weather Report, and am I missing out?
Difficult to say. I mean, all those albums, I've got all those albums at home, but I bought them between the age of 14 and 17.
Right.
And then punk came along.
But I was going to say, but I mean, I was reading your blog, and it seems that you had more suspicion of punk than you did of artists, jazz fusion artists.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the good thing about punk was that you can get on the stage and bluff it a bit and make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
But the problem with punk was that it had a little police force with it.
Right.
Gestapo.
Right.
And they were usually sort of ex-Bowie fans, or still Bowie fans. They were very, very middle-class punks, and they used to come around and inspect your collection.
Right.
And create this horrible atmosphere and... give you quite a hard time if they found a Mahavishnu.
Were these Gestapo particularly kind of vicious in the Ipswich area, is that?
Yeah, they were. I remember this guy called Patrick Forge, who's now a big DJ, isn't he? He was particularly snobby and nasty.
Right, person. Okay. But despite this, despite these people, you retained a love of jazz fusion. I mean, what do the words jazz fusion mean to you? I mean, are they swear words or?
I mean, part of the thing was I was learning when I was learning bass.
Yeah.
I had a lot of people said, you know, the whole thing in when you're growing up in a town like Ipswich is to get your chops right.
Yeah.
And not look like a complete fool if you start playing and jamming with people. And the kind of culture of that thing, that kind of amateur sort of suburban thing, is to sort of push you in the direction of like, oh, he's a really good musician.
right, you
know,
okay.
It's chick career, you know, if you want to play keyboards, bass players, you know. You listen to Pastorius. Fantastic.
Okay.
You should check out Stanley Clarke, Jeff Beck, fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. That kind of, it's almost sort of directly derived from music shops.
Right.
The kind of culture in music shops. It kind of, you know, it permeates out into the kind of, if you want to learn how to play, then you follow these kind of.
Okay.
Guidelines.
So who are your first loves in this genre?
Well, I started listening to Bill Bruford's band because I liked Yes.
Okay.
I did. I mean, I was 14 years old and still appreciate bits of it, actually, if I'm honest, you know.
Yeah.
I never liked blues-derived rock.
Right.
You know, Rolling Stones, that sort of, you know,
yeah.
That was the other kind of thing, you know. If you're a real player, you do blues.
Okay.
But actually, I was always more attracted to very pretentious bands.
Difficult music.
Difficult, yeah.
Okay. So what's the first thing we're going to listen to then?
Well, I thought I'd play Brand X because I went to a gig back in 77 or 78. I can't remember where, at the venue.
Yeah.
In London when it was in Victoria, and I went to see Bill Bruford's band, but Brand X were the main headline, and I didn't think much of Bruford's band on the night.
Right.
As I sat on my own on a little candlelit table with a load of other guys.
In Marshall
also,
t-shirts.
Yeah, Marshall and, WOW bass teachers. But I was really impressed with Brand X, but specifically the bass player. And this is, you got to remember, I just started playing bass. So,
okay.
I had no particular heroes at that point, and I saw this guy, Percy Jones.
Okay. So this is Brand X, and what's the title of this number?
DMZ, and I think this is their best ever track. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Sit back and enjoy the crazy sound of Brand X.
But we will be skipping it forward because it's a long track, and there are boring bits in it. And
okay.
This is the whole thing about jazz rock. You have to skip.
Okay.
Things.
All right, well, we'll fade down and skip on in a little while, but for now, here's Brand X. Thank you. I have to say, Kev, I'm already convinced. I think this is excellent. So we can stop this segment right now.
No, don't. There's a great bass solo, okay?
Okay.
Bring the music back up for the bass.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Fantastic, isn't it?
It's obviously being very familiar with your own bass playing. I can now see where you got it all from, and I thought you were an innovator, Kev, and now I realise that you're not. Obviously, there's a lot of kind of suspicion about the fretless bass as an instrument in itself, but presumably, as soon as you saw this, you went out and got one and just practiced for 15 years or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think Percy Jones is a unique player. He can make his bass sound like a sort of chicken, hiccuping chicken or something.
And you're a big fan of chickens, as we know.
Yes. with Brand X, I think, as with a lot of jazz rock, you tend to focus on the person who's making the most interesting noise.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, Brand X are very funky as well. A lot of people sort of don't know that, you know. I mean, but funky in a sort of 9/8 type of...
Yeah. Is this Phil Collins drumming on this?
No, this is... I think this is someone called Chuck Berge, American drummer.
Okay.
But all the Brand X drummers are funky, including Collins.
Okay, so this is jazz fusion. So this is a fusion of jazz and funk, you would say.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, it was... Yes.
What other fusions are we going to experience? Are we going to wind this forward and get to a good bit?
Yeah. Yeah, just move this bit on. I mean...
Okay.
This is the Goodsall's guitar solo, and he's not... I'm not particularly interested in him.
Okay, so we'll wind through the guitar solo. Here we go.
You can stop now.
Okay, here we go.
Because you get more chicken-inspired bass solo here.
Okay, good. Let's just fade this back up again now.
Yeah. It's fantastic, isn't it?
It is extraordinary. I feel almost embarrassed that I've got to the age of 35 and I've not even heard it. Yeah, I just dismissed jazz fusion completely.
With Stump, you know, the whole idea of, for me to get, when I wanted to get a band together when I was 25 years old or 23 years old or whatever it is, was to marry this track with Captain Beefheart.
Right.
Suction Prince by Captain Beefheart.
Yeah.
And
very successfully done,
yes,
if I may say so.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, there's three other people,
yeah,
you know, that changed the flavour of it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, when you start off in music, you have a little ref thing, a hero or someone that you want to emulate.
Yeah.
And then if you're lucky, your approach changes and it becomes something more personal.
What else have you brought in? So maybe we can move on from Brand X now to something else.
Yeah, I just brought in Jones played a lot on Eno's early records in Another Green World in particular.
Okay,
and I think it's a shame that not a shame, but it's I find it perplexing that people diss Brand X so much and slag them off because it's seen as worthless kind of jazz fusion music that's rubbish.
Mm.
But at the same time, they obviously Eno's got a very good reputation as being, you know, someone who's made for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But Percy Jones is right all over the primary Eno recordings.
Okay.
And I just thought I'd play another track with him on.
Okay, let's do that then. So yeah. What is this? Is this queued up here, Jamie?
Okay. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the track. It's track 2 on on.
We're just stretching across to.
Okay, it's Over Fire Island on Another Green World.
Okay, Eno featuring Jones. Brian Eno there featuring the work of Percy Jones. It seems, Kev, that Percy Jones seems to be the sole saviour of jazz fusion for you.
I think he's a remarkable musician and very individual. And you know, people criticise any fretless bass player for being sort of sub-Jaco.
Okay.
But he's definitely got something different in terms of rhythm, harmonics, you know, use of harmonics, everything about it. And it's a funny thing, with fantastic musicians like that, I don't think he's really found a real fantastic bunch of musicians, you know.
Right.
I mean, the Eno stuff is fantastic. But after that, he went on to do more jazz rock, more kind of playing with guitarists with, you know, very heavy-handed metal style guitarists.
Right.
Jazz rock as a genre, you know, they have these riffs, units and riffs, and they're not really much to do with music, but it's a culture of playing, playing sort of dazzling riffs together in unison, usually. And this is seen as a kind of,
something to be lauded.
Yeah, something to be lauded and admired. And I think it's remarkable how much it's damaged that genre, you know, that kind of getting your chops together in a unison riff type idea.
For an inexplicable reason, you've brought along some of the work, something by Yes. Is this just because you want to listen to Yes this afternoon, or or does it tie in with your?
It kind of ties. Well, prog and jazz rock are kind of connected in a way. And Bill Bruford's band, when he left Yes and did his own, sort of, it was very jazz rock, but. The seeds of jazz rock, you know, they're all in prog rock, and you know, obviously in jazz as well.
Sure, yeah,
again, I just, you know, just feel that a lot of prog rock is far more interesting than today's rock. You know, and it's far more interesting to be pretentious and to try and, you know. To invent you know, a kind of pretentious form and to actually challenge yourself and do all that. You know, it irritates the hell out of most people, though, you know. I mean,
women especially.
Yeah, it's remarkable that, you know, I can't play any of this stuff at home before I get a complaint.
Glad to have given you the opportunity to listen.
And that's not, that's not an unusual reaction. It's, you know, women are up and down the world.
yeah.
do not like this kind of music.
No.
It irritates them like hell.
Okay, well, let's play something that will irritate the hell out of women listeners to Resonance FM. So this is Yes, we're about to listen to. And what is this?
This is called 5% for Nothing, and it's only about 30 seconds long.
Okay, excellent. Let's hear this. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's my other favourite bass player, Chris Squire from Yes.
Okay.
And he really is a gigantic figure.
A gigantic figure.
Yeah. Literally.
Thank you for bringing these records in to my attention this afternoon, Kev.
I don't want listeners to get the impression that all I listen to is prog, by the way.
I did get frog marched into
this studio by...
Yourself, your own music, you've recently had an album out, which is excellent, and we're about to hear a track from that.
Mm.
Any more musical plans currently?
I'm just writing songs at the moment on simple instruments. I'm not using any synthesis or sampling.
Okay.
Just guitar songs, really.
And you've abandoned the saw for now, so it's acoustic guitar is the new thing.
Yeah,
is your new thing? Is your new obsession?
Yeah. I'll play a bit of saw on the next one, but I am getting quite dispirited because I don't sell any records. And
who does?
Well, yeah, no, I just want to hit, Rodri.
I know you do, Kev. I know. Let's hear a track from your latest record. This is Taff Trams and Mars by Kev Hopper. We just heard there the sound of Kev Hopper, my eminent guest on Prove Me Wrong this week, with Taff, Trams and Mars from his latest album. And humongous thanks to him for coming in this week. And you'll be hanging around to see Stars in Battle Dress.
I love later them.
I know you do. I know you. That's, you know, it doesn't happen by accident, this show. I make it, you know. I don't put sworn enemies in the same building at the same time, but you've just voted this your them your favourite kind of album of the year, haven't you?
Yep, I have.
Okay, thank you for coming in, and now it's time to consider such weighty matters as the England football team's grouping with Paraguay, Sweden and Trinidad / Tobago in the 2006 World Cup. It's time to turn to Steve Graziak for his views on the preceding week in sport.
We'll start off with the draw for the World Cup finals, where England drew Trinidad and Tobago, Paraguay and Sweden during an interminable ceremony on Friday, the highlight of which was a bunch of Togo fans going mental when they drew France. Meanwhile, the British Embassy in host nation Germany have set up a website that includes handy German phrases for England fans, such as, he was sick as a parrot, or, after briefly consulting his linesman, the referee awarded England the goal. All very useful, of course, but one can't help wondering that phrases like, I bought my ticket through eBay and they wouldn't let me in, ooh, Owen Hargreaves is coming on, just what we needed, and lost on penalties would be far more useful. Also in football, the most unlikely club ever to hit the football headlines did so during the week, namely Kettering Town, as a saga unfolded around Paul Gascoigne that was the most bizarre and dramatic football saga since, well, the last one involving Gazza. Gascoigne was fired from his job managing the non-league club during the week after chairman Imran Ladak claimed that Gascoigne had violated club policy on 37 different occasions. Is that all? Gascoigne responded by saying, I'm a multi-millionaire and I'm angry. I told him it was the fans and Paul Gascoigne versus a doctor. Who will win? The record, Kettering have an average home gate of 1,000. I reckon if Ladak has any of that banana-flavoured medicine you used to be forced to take as a kid, then he's a winner by a landslide. In American football, two players from the Chicago Bears are under investigation by the FBI after they brawled at an FBI shooting range in Chicago last weekend. The fight allegedly took place after large amounts of alcohol were consumed at a barbecue after several players from the team had been invited to the range by local FBI employees. Brawls, barbecues, alcohol. The feds have really let themselves go since the X-Files finished, haven't they? I reckon Scotland Yard should respond and invite Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer over a cheese and wine party now. England's cricketers start a one-day series against Pakistan this weekend, keen to wipe away memories of a dreadful test series. The players will be hoping there won't be a repeat of an incident that occurred in Pakistan during a day-night match several years ago, where play was halted for several minutes when thousands of insects swarmed into the stadium after becoming attracted to the floodlights. As a precautionary measure, Kevin Peterson's hair dye has been confiscated. The NBA have abandoned their policy of drug testing players during matches after a player missed part of a game because he was detained until he'd finished giving a sample. Seattle player Reggie Evans missed 2 minutes of a recent game against the New York Knicks as a result of the policy. Maybe they should introduce this policy in football, though. That way at least Rio Ferdinand couldn't refuse to take one because he's at B&Q or something. Mind you, judging by his recent performances, I doubt anyone would really notice. The Sports Personality of the Year Awards air on BBC One tonight, with England all-rounder Andrew Flintoff the hot favourite to snag the main award. He's been ordered by the England and Wales Cricket Board to stay up in Pakistan to watch coverage just in case he does win. Anyone who saw his face during the Ashes winning parade in London in September will know that staying up late won't exactly be a problem for him. Right, Rodri, I've got a bit of a spot here to put you on the spot.
OK, go ahead.
Who do you reckon will win these main awards then at the Sports Personality Year?
Well, the thing is, Steve, you know, I feel pretty clueless, and the reason I get you onto this programme is for you to tell me things like that and for you to muse openly about who might win and who might not win.
Well, that serves me right then, doesn't it, really, for trying to put you onto the spot? This is a revenge for last week when I put you on the spot with that baseball evaluation thing, wasn't it?
I got nowhere near on that occasion either, I seem to remember.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Kettering?
I've never been to Kettering, no. I think I might have gone through there on a train once, but that's probably about it.
Can you name anyone famous from Kettering?
I can't, no.
No, there is no one famous from Kettering. I've just done a bit of research. While you were talking, I did a bit of research, and right. There is no one famous from Kettering, nor, it appears, is there anyone famous from Paraguay?
No, I can't think of anyone famous from Paraguay. The only semi-famous people I can think of from Paraguay are, well, footballers, really, and that's it. They did used to have a rather bizarre goalkeeper called Jose Chilavert, and
okay.
His speciality was taking free kicks. I mean, he used to go forward and take free kicks, and he used to be rather good at it. I mean, he was very much the David Beckham of Paraguay, except he also used to wear a pair of gloves and keep goal at the same time. It was quite remarkable.
Well, that's magnificent, and I take back what I said about there being no one famous from Paraguay, because that's...
Well, he's not that famous, he's only kind of a footballer.
Well, it should be. I mean, that's an incredible claim to fame. Steve, thanks very much for calling in today, and now it's time to hear a band who never qualified for the group stages of any World Cup. It's Jackdaw with Crowbar. That was Jackdaw with Crowbar from their debut 12-inch EP, Monarchy Mayhem, and Fish Paste, which you can't find now for love nor money, nor indeed barter for a Cocteau Twins 12-inch EP, or indeed any other currency you might care to think of. How they ever imagined that a singer pretending to be a chicken could ever work long term, I'll never know, but I thank them from the bottom of my heart for giving it a go. Last I heard, the guitarist was teaching music in Leamington Spa, just in case any of your children go to school in Leamington Spa. No. We're having rather too much of theme from A Summer's Place at the moment because we're scrabbling around for compact discs. But never mind.
At last, now it's time for that thinker, that drinker, that candlestick tinker. It's Neil Scott, and this is his thought for the week.
According to Nietzsche, the English made their Sundays dull so that work on Mondays would seem attractive in comparison. Indeed, right up until 1994, English Sundays were so boring that you'd sometimes find yourself reading, or even thinking, either that or watching Songs of Praise. Then came deregulation, and suddenly all the shops were open, and the schedules were dominated by Pimp My Ride. Obviously, Nietzsche hasn't been to England recently. If he was here today, on one of our identikit high streets, it is unlikely that he'd call it dull. I can imagine him dizzying at the sight of our cathedrals of consumption. I see him depressed at the people inside, filling their lives with plastic crap. It's almost as though the current hedonism of the weekend is the polar opposite of the old gloominess. At this point, you may expect me to condemn shopping as materialistic, or praise dullness as spiritual. But no. In both cases, the weekend is a tyrannical presence. It distorts pleasure and makes the working week a misery.
For a pleasant Sunday afternoon, why don't you tune to
Thank you to Neil Scott for that cheery and incisive view of modern Britain, delivered in just over a minute without any noticeable errors to speak of. Another triumph. Now it's time to indulge my love of Bollywood films with a song from the magnificent Asha Bozal. I was concerned about pronouncing her name correctly until I looked on the internet and discovered that she's been credited as variously Asha Bonzale, Asha Bonzel, Asha Bonsley, Asha Bozale, and Asha Bosley. So I don't imagine it matters too much. And this song is the incredibly beautiful O Sathi Ray. Nietzsche, Bozell there, and now we are linking up live via some wires to a room not 10 feet away from here, in which are sitting the duo known as Stars in Battle Dress, who will be performing exclusive material for us this afternoon. Welcome to James and Richard, and here they are with two songs in a seamless medley. Stars in Battle Dress.
All of the contact is all implied. A slip or a shoelace tied, or an unplanned hand against me found, through luck on a backseat ride. And all the focus is luck, not skill. It's like I'm Everett Peacock Hill. And all the trouble men who matter have black eyes, wise I've known, and it's giving me problems still. What's this I'm peering through? Is it the keyhole or you? There's never room in there for two. Was never Catholic, it's all self-taught. I'm back in the same trap caught. I've a mindset met by what I can't get, and it's selling my sweet one short. And all the visions are in once more. Let's just be thankful that I can't draw. Cause all the trouble men who matter have black eyes, wise I've known, and it's making my eyebrows sore. What's this I'm peering through? Is it the keyhole or you? There's never room in there for two.
Now, buy one now. You need a change.
before they're worth 10 more.
That was the beautiful Stars in Battle Dress with Peacock Hill and Buy One Now. And we'll be having some more music from them in about 10 minutes' time. Go now. Sorry, I'm sorry. Microphone's up. So, Kev Hobber's leaving the studio. I'll allow him to close the door before I embark on this. Not 50 minutes ago, I was regaling you with my tale of the Global Battle of the Bands competition, or GBOB for short. You'll recall that when we left the story, I was sitting alongside Steve Lillywhite, Glenn Matlock, a girl out of Rooksup, and a bloke out of Wang Chung, about to judge 24 bands from across the world who are each about to play an 8-minute set. Rather like a sumptuous sticky toffee pudding, the first few mouthfuls, or in this case bands, went down very easily. Mia from the Rhondda in South Wales, or that hilarious breed of band which consists of three overweight hideous men plus a divine voluptuous beauty who they clearly begged and begged to join their band after they saw her do a karaoke one night in Pontypridd. We were equipped with notes on each band, and the ones for Mia informed us that they've been playing live constantly since December 2004, which must surely take its toll on even the most committed of musicians. A jazz funk band from Mexico had a singer wearing a poncho, which he whipped off Bucks Fizz style after about 4 minutes, while their bass player slapped upon an instrument with about 18 strings, reinforcing my view that the more strings there are on a bass guitar, the worse the band is. A sullen group from the Faroe Islands then surged out in front with a couple of passable Joy Division imitations. Their singer, Hans Marius Ziska, apparently used to be in a band called Flux, whose single, Mr. Headless, spent months, I tell you, at number one in the Faroe Islands top 40. Extraordinary. The singer in the Danish band, meanwhile, was so infuriated by the lack of audience response that he took off his guitar and marched up and down the stage, clapping his hands above his head. There was still no response, so after 30 seconds he was forced to put his guitar back on and finish the song to a dribble of applause. We weren't even a third of the way through, and it was already 9 p.m. Canada's Unit 731 took the stage, and the over-enthusiastic singer tried to ascertain if we were ready to receive them. "Are you ready to party?" he asked. "Are you ready to have fun with the unit?" There was a general murmur of, "Who wants this T-shirt?" he yelled, brandishing a T-shirt. "I don't know. What size is it?" I shouted back. The bands continued to come and go. The American college rock band whose gimmick was to have a singer wearing plus fours and occasionally doing the Charleston. The Ukrainian band who expelled all their anger at the political upheaval in their homeland by screaming constantly for 8 fantastic minutes. The Russian band who only just made it to the final after their guitarist was arrested on touchdown at Heathrow on suspicion of molesting a member of the cabin crew. And the German band who could have called themselves anything, anything at all, but on one day about 5 years ago were sitting around when one of them said, in German, "I know, how about we call ourselves Circle of Grin?" And incredibly, was met with complete consensus. At about 1:45 in the morning, it was finally time for us judges to go on stage and present the award and a cheque for a not insubstantial $100,000 to the winner. Myself, Glenn Matlock, Steve Lillywhite, the bloke from Wang Chung, and the girl from Rooksup stood backstage waiting for the strains of Carmina Burana to peter out. "It's like the Eurovision Song Contest on crack," said Steve. "Most of this lot would get null points," added Glenn. At which point the Scandinavian compere, a rock derelict who made Iggy Pop look fresh-faced, turned around. "That was me," he said. "Sorry," said Steve. "That was me," he repeated. "I was the first to score null point for Norway." And it was him. I recognised him. Jan Tijgen, the man who stunned Europe in 1978 with his appalling song Mil et a Mil, was now about to pass on the wooden spoon of musical history to an Irish band, Kopeck, who will now fade unceremoniously into obscurity, albeit $100,000 richer. Now, we all have musical memories from our childhood, ones that shape the way we appreciate music today. However much some blokes would like you to think that they adored the work of Einstürzende Neubauten at the age of six, the fact is, they were listening to various albums by the Wombles and really getting off on them. When I was six, my dad was really into Rock Follies, a television drama about a three-piece female band, the Little Ladies, and their struggles within the harsh world of the music business. Our house reverberated to the sounds of Rula Lenska, Charlotte Cornwell and Julie Covington for about 2 years, and when I heard the two Rock Follies albums again earlier this year, for the first time in 25 years, it was like a repressed memory resurfacing. Now, most people would file that moment quietly away, but as I've got a radio show on Resonance FM, you could hardly expect me to do that. So, here are the Little Ladies with the song OK, written by the saxophone player out of Roxy Music. And make the most of this, because it's the first and the last time you'll hear Julie Covington on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Listening to
Nantucket sleigh ride there, flagging up the beginning of 7 or so minutes of vague political analysis, courtesy of our very own Andrew Ward.
Hello, Rodri. And the week in politics this week began on Monday, as weeks often do, with a bang, as Gordon Brown published his sensational 264-page-long pre-budget report. I haven't had time to read it all the way through, but I did see a 12-page-long report on the pre-budget report in Tuesday's Times. I didn't have time to read that all the way through either, but I did look at the two cartoons, although I only understood one of them. When reports like this are published, a popular pastime among top political commentators, such as myself, is to measure them for certain buzzwords. For example, on Monday, the Chancellor mentioned the word stability 5 times, global 12 times, and inflation or inflationary 23 times. Words that weren't mentioned include FWAR and Geronimo. Also on Monday, new legislation came into force enabling same-sex couples to enter into civil partnerships. However, one same-sex couple, who despite weeks of rumours to the contrary, will not be entering into a civil partnership, are the former Tory leadership hopeful Davids, David Davis and David Cameron, whose race for the coveted title of Tory leader David ended on Tuesday with a victory for Mr Cameron, who immediately called for an end to name-calling, backbiting, point-scoring and finger-pointing, saying he was fed up with the Punch and Judy politics of Westminster, a disappointment for those of us who'd hoped to see more crocodiles and strings of sausages in the House of Commons. One MP who wasn't tired of name-calling, back-pointing and finger-biting was veteran Labour backbench maverick Dennis Skinner, who was ordered out of the Commons after making allegations of cocaine use about baby-faced Shadow Chancellor George Osborne. When the Speaker asked Mr Skinner to withdraw his remarks, the maverick Labour backbench veteran refused. "It's true," said the Labour maverick veteran backbencher. "It was in the news of the world." Mr Cameron will, of course, be hoping to succeed where former Tory leaders, John Majors, William Hague, Michael Howard and the other one have all failed in defeating New Labour in a general election. Former Prime Minister John Majors warmly congratulated the two Davids on the way in which they'd conducted the leadership campaign, which had greatly benefited the Conservative Party. "I warmly congratulate the two Davids on the way in which they've conducted the campaign, which has greatly benefited the Conservative Party," he said. And finally on Friday, lovable, bumptious, Worcesterish mop-top MP Boris Johnson resigned as editor of The Spectator, having been made Shadow Higher Education Secretary. Speaking about the pressures of combining a political career as well as editing the magazine, which Fleet Street Wags had dubbed The Sextator, following revelations that some of its staff had had sex, Mr Johnson had previously told Desert Island Discs presenter Sue Lawley, "I have successfully ridden two horses for quite a long time, but I have to admit that there have been moments when the distance between the two horses has grown terrifyingly wide, and I did momentarily come off." Rodri, have you ever successfully ridden two horses for quite a long time, but had to admit that there have been moments when the distance between the two horses has grown terrifyingly wide and you did momentarily come off?
Well, it's interesting you should ask. No, Andrew, I've never successfully ridden two horses for quite a long time, but had to admit that there have been moments when the distance between those two horses has grown terrifyingly wide and momentarily come off. But have you ever successfully ridden two horses for quite a long time, but had to admit that there have been moments when the distance between the two horses has grown terrifyingly wide and you did momentarily come off?
Andrew? No.
No. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for providing me with the script for that fantastic little exchange, which worked absolutely marvellously. So, Dennis Skinner's cocaine jibe. I was reading up about this, and I found out that John Major called Blair a dimwit at one point in the House of Commons and had to withdraw his remark. But Tony Banks said that Margaret Thatcher acted with the sensitivity of a sex-starved boa constrictor and didn't have to withdraw his remark at all.
Well, presumably that wasn't libelous or offensive in any way. I know that Dennis Skinner had previously been in trouble for calling somebody, I think John Gummer, a little squirt. Just think what happened if you called him a...
You, of course, will be devastated at the end of the Conservative leadership hopeful Davids contest, because that's pretty much padded out most of your pieces over the last 4 weeks.
It takes so long to say that I don't really need to think of anything else. I did notice, though, that David Davis kind of celebrated by dancing with busty blondes and brunettes in Annabelle's while his wife was at home.
Also, pensions. We talked about pensions last week, and I see that, well, we tried to talk about pensions, but we didn't really get very far because you decided they were boring. But this isn't boring. Gordon Brown has announced that it's going to be prohibited for people to gain tax advantages by investing in fine wines. And I know that you're a bit of a wine buff yourself, although it's not so much investment as instant gratification. Have you got any wine tips for me this weekend?
Yes, I have. Red wine is particularly good this year.
Red, you say? Okay, not yeah. you wouldn't say white at all.
Is white the other one? No, red, I'd say.
Red, okay. Good. Well, I'll check out some red wine this weekend.
Pop down to your local vintners and ask for some red wine. There are plenty there for you.
Excellent. Oh, I shall do that. Andrew, one question before you go. Do you think that British university professors should be allowed to make albums?
I think it should be compulsory.
That's very good, because here are Ronaldo and the Loaf. That was Ronaldo and the Loaf from the album Songs for Swinging Larvae. And it's time to go from the ridiculous to the marvellous with our guests this afternoon, Stars in Battle Dress.
Watch me.
to sleep. No, I will not pipe down. No, don't watch me weep. Go back to sleep. Blessed are all with vision unswerving. Don't watch me weep. Go back to
That was the exquisite sound of Stars in Battle Dress with Mewstone Avenue. If you're lucky enough to own a 2006 diary yet, make a note that they will be playing at London's Water Rats Theatre on the 28th of January. And I should know, because I'm putting the gig on myself. Many thanks to them for coming in this afternoon. Next week's guest will be Rogan Whitenails, a distinguished poet and lover of words. I also love words. Some of my best sentences have been constructed using them. And so, to trail Rogan's appearance, I thought I'd play one of my favourite collection of words. This recording was made this summer by me on my mobile phone as I sat at Shrewsbury Station and heard the announcement of the 1533 Arriva train service from Shrewsbury to Pwllheli, featuring dozens of tiny Welsh villages that I'd never heard of and will probably never visit. So take it away, Arriva Trains announcer lady.
Caersus, Machynlleth, Derby Junction, Bore and Aberystwyth, travelling the front coach of the train. And for Welsh call, Newtown, Caersus, Machynlleth, Derby Junction, Penhelig, Aberdyfi, Tywyn, Tom Fannai, Llangorrill, Fairbourne, Morvermelba, Balmer, Clanaba, Talabont, Dufferin or Didwy, Clanbedda, Penfarn, Clandanug, Harlech, Teguin, Talfarnai, Clandequin, Penrhyndeudraeth, Minforth, Porthmadog, Crigius, Penychain, Aberech, and Pwllheli, travelling the rear coach of the train. Platform 4 was the 1532 Arriva Trains Wales service to Aberystwyth and Pwllheli. Penhelig, Tomfannai, Llangoril, Morvermelbach, Llanaber, Talabont, Dufferin or Didwy, Llanbedda, Penfarn, Llandanug, Talfarnai, Llandequin, Penychain and Aberech are request stops, and passengers for these stations should ask the conductor on the train to arrange for the train to stop to allow them to alight.
There we had the sound of Wales, or rather the sound of an English woman having a pretty good stab at pronouncing the names of Welsh villages. And that brings us to the end of this week's time-wasting radio show, in which we had a live session from Stars in Battle Dress. I had a long chat with Kev Hopper about Brand X, and we heard Rula Lenska singing for the first and probably last time on Resonance FM. And I'd like to thank all of them, particularly Rula, in her absence. Details of all the previous shows are up on the internet at timewasting.net/radio, and you can email me to air your views at radio@timewasting.net, but you won't have your email read out on the radio, because for goodness sake, Resonance FM does not subscribe to the kind of interactive, you make the programme type nonsense that the BBC is always foisting us on us these days. To close the show, we're going to hear from Gene McDaniels, who had a number of hits in the 1960s before he changed his name to Eugene McDaniels and recorded two extraordinary social consciousness records for Atlantic. The first was called Headless Heroes of the Apocalypse, but this song, Unspoken Dreams of Light, is from the second, Outlaw, where soul, rock, R&B and the protest song align with politics, theology, astrology, urban affairs, hallucinogenic drugs and, rather oddly, the carol We Three Kings of Orient Are. On the run-up to Christmas, what could possibly be more appropriate? Thank you for listening. Next up is Tom Chivers with his contemporary poetry show, and I'm off to Balham to fix someone's computer. Goodbye.
Venture with me in the uncharted sea of the unspoken dreams of light. Speak you not of genocide. Indians have yet to hide. Time will come when death will ride a mean and bloody train from the smog-filled coasts of California to the rock-strewn coasts of Maine. Massive blacky whitey clouds, cold light on winds of change, to sound the thunder heard across the land I know. Children of the light must hate the night in order to redeem the skeletons of blood-stained hands that show. Legions of the Christian hordes conspire to suck away the brains of children of the dark again, I know. Lips that whisper love can scream the hate, for though so fortunate is not to be encased and have it stand through time. Rationales of higher ups where elevators cruise the clouds conclude that Satan's children are not bright sometimes. Rationalities hear the acted cries of wolf and hope that justice will prevail in new breed light in time. Venture with me in the uncharted sea of the unspoken dreams of love.